will be welcoming a group of students into our classroom. Now, when you think of that, how many of you can get that picture? And you see your students rolling into your classroom here in a few weeks. How many of you can see that? Okay. So what do you see? What do you see as you think of that? What are you expecting to see? Think of personalities. The topic description talks about personalities and abilities. I'd like you to help me. I have a little problem here because I had written down, made a whole list of personality traits, just one word answers, adjectives, nouns, and I left it back at our hotel. So I don't have that. So can you help me? Let's just give, what do you see? When you see your students, how do you describe them? Just one word answers. Somebody have a watch on them? It could time us for a minute. Who has a watch? Who's going to be our timekeeper? Watch or phone? Chad? Stop us in a minute if we don't run out. All right, just call them out. Call them out loud and clear so everyone can hear. What do you think of?
Sensitive.
Again?
Sensitive.
Sensitive?
Dramatic.
Eager.
Shy.
Rambunctious.
Competitive.
Athletic. Lazy. Grumpy. Moody.
Clumsy.
Insecure.
Quiet.
Talkative.
Slow.
Ornery. Sharp. What are you going to say, Lauren? Put names in your mind.
Good actors.
Again?
Loud.
All right, time's up. All right, so you get the picture. This is your perspective. This is our perspective. Now let's shift gears just a little bit. When those children come tumbling into your classroom here in a few weeks, we just described or thought about what we'll see. What will God see? What's God's perspective? Help me out here. I have some verses on your handout. Ladies first. Call out the answers, fill in the blanks. All souls are blank, saith the Lord God. All souls are mine. This is God talking. So we're thinking of it from God's perspective. We're looking at our classrooms from God's perspective. All souls are mine. Number two, whether we live or die, we are the Lord's. Number three, it is blank that hath blank us and not we ourselves. We are blank people and the sheep of blank pasture. It is God, He that hath made us and not we ourselves. We are His people and the sheep of His pasture. All right, now let's summarize three things where we filled in the blanks. So these children are His. The first one might be a little harder. Souls. What's the word that we filled in there? It is He that hath, what was that word? Made. So it's His creation. That's right. That was the word I was thinking of. So these children are His creation, His, anyone? People, His sheep. I mean, that's figurative, but you get the picture. Number four and five are refer to God's thoughts. Blank are thy thoughts to us word, they cannot be reckoned up in order unto thee. Anyone know what that word?
Many.
Many are thy thoughts. Think about this. This is from God's perspective. Many are God's thoughts to usward and to each one of our students. What about number five? How blank are blank thoughts unto thee? How precious are thy thoughts unto me? How blank is the blank of them? Great is the sum. Very good. So now just think about that. These are God's thoughts. This is God's perspective when those children come into our classrooms. There's a song that is also written as if it was written from God's perspective, and I like the words. It goes like this. Verse 1 says, can't you see them standing there? And then it says, the blind, the lame, the sinner. We're thinking about it from a school perspective. The question is, can't you see them standing there? Can you see your students standing there? But I really like the chorus. It goes like this. God says, how many of you know that song? Can't you see them standing there? Look at them through my eyes. Here's what the chorus says. Again, this is from God's perspective. He says, look at them through my eyes. See them as I do. Go out into the world and bring them back with you. And this next line, I love it. It says, love them home to me. Love them home to me. That's a powerful statement. And we think of it coming from God. God's perspective. And let my love be, I'll start again, and let my love be all they see in you. Let my love be all they see in you. And when you do, you will, what did I just give you? Love them home to me. When they see that, my love in you, when you share that, they will see my love and you will love them home to me. Where they long to be. He goes on and he says, I've shown you the way, so love them home to me. Powerful thoughts. So when your students enter your classroom here in a few weeks, they come into your classroom, they come through that entrance door with a stamp already on them. A stamp of God, and that stamp says, from God's perspective, I know the thoughts that I think toward you. I know the plans I have for you, to prosper you, to give you an expected end. This is the designer speaking. It's the creator speaking. He knows, he sees, and from our little vantage point, all we see are the details. All we see are the details. God sees the big picture. He sees the intended result. We need to also remember that school is not about you. School is not about the teacher. Or is it? The teacher goes to school because of the students. I went to my classroom last week just so I could have some quiet time and to study for this topic, this workshop. And I was sitting there at my desk and there was 16 empty desks sitting in my classroom. What good was that classroom without the students? What's that classroom? It didn't do a bit of good for me. I mean, other than giving me a little bit of quiet space. But school is about the students. And so, thinking about what we just talked about from God's perspective as he sees these students coming into that classroom, is it too strong of a statement to say that school is about God? Is that too strong of a statement? I'll just leave that as a question. You can think about that. So the burden of this workshop is simply this. Will you and I, as teachers, commit to walking in tandem with God and do all that we can do to help these students achieve the result that God intends for them. You'll see 7 points now on your handout. In some ways, I feel like I'm just saying all the thoughts that have been rolling around these last several days just in a different way. That's the disadvantage of being at the tail end of this institute is it seems like everything has been said already. But hopefully, what we can learn here today can be a blessing, and we can hopefully you can gain a little nugget to take home and use in your classroom. So what I'd like to do is just take the analogy of the stew or the soup. So how many of you enjoy cooking? All right. So we've got a good crowd. These 7 points have to do with cooking. So we're going to pretend. I thought of it. I should have brought a big kettle up here and sat on our stove, but I didn't. I think we're all old enough. We can visualize that. So we have a kettle up here in the stove. We're going to make a kettle of soup, and you have about 170 days until that needs to be served, until you're finished with that kettle of soup. After those 170 days are passed, you're going to serve it ready or not. Whatever, however you made that soup, that's what will be delivered. That's what goes out. So keep that in mind. That's our perspective. We're going to think of that analogy. And so how are we going to do it? Number one. We're making soup. Identify the I word. Ingredients. We don't have the luxury of choosing our ingredients. Do any of you choose the personalities or skill set that you get handed? They come into our doors. We take what we get. We don't have that luxury of choosing them. We take what we get and we work with that. So, my first point here is identify the ingredients. We take the personalities, the abilities, the talents, backgrounds, world views, habits, learning styles, and then we multiply that times 6, times 8, times 10, times 15, maybe times 20, and that's what we work with. I was thinking about personalities when I was studying for this. And so I went to the World Book Encyclopedia and I read what it had to say and scanned down over it. And it wasn't like I really wanted to delve into different personality types and that kind of thing. But I found it was interesting. It talked about how for hundreds of years, psychologists have tried to understand people. We have people trying to understand people. People are trying to understand what makes people tick. What makes people do the things they want. What makes people do the things that they do. This is what the World Book said after that. And I thought it was very interesting. Listen. The simplicity of personality type theories is appealing, but it also limits their value. An individual's behavior is so complex, diverse, and variable that the person cannot be sorted usefully into a simple category. I'm going to read that again because it's kind of a... There's a lot of detail there. So they, remember, they're trying to simplify people and put them into boxes. And so now they're saying, they're summarizing, they're saying, the simplicity of personality type theories is appealing, but it also limits their value. An individual's behavior is so complex, diverse, and variable that the person cannot be sorted usefully into a simple category. I think we should, as teachers, as Christian teachers, I think we should attempt to understand our students. But remember, we're teachers, we're not psychologists. So there's boundaries that I think we need to put around ourselves with that. Remember, we don't have the luxury of choosing the ingredients. We need to accept and embrace each student. So I was thinking about this. Question came to me. If you could choose your students, what would they look like? If you could choose the perfect group of students for your classroom, if you had that option, your board came to you and said, all right, we're going to give you 10 students and you can choose, you can customize them for your classroom, what would they look like? Similar to you, to how your, to your personality, your ability. I'm glad we don't get to choose, but it's interesting to think about that. Choose to love. It's not always easy, but it's a choice. Choose to love. I work with a young man in the last two summers now, and I was telling him about this talk and about this institute, and that we were coming to Oregon, and told him what I was supposed to talk about and asked him if he has any ideas. He's maybe 22, 23 years old. He thought for a bit, and then this is what he said. He said, look for each person's hidden gem. Look for each person's hidden gem. And coming from him, I thought that was... worth noting. Still thinking about this thing about identifying the ingredient. Sometimes we need to go the second mile with our students. The first year I taught, there was a little boy or a young man in, I think he was seventh grade. He had a difficult time learning. There were some challenges there. But I also thought he could do better than what he was doing. It just seemed like, I mean, it was my first year teaching, so I was uncertain. But it just seemed like there was different times where he just played the dumb card. And I couldn't tell if he was could do any better than that or not. So I sat down with him one day, and he wasn't getting good grades at all. Just barely making passing grades. So I sat down with him one day and I talked to him and I said, I think you can do better. I couldn't get a lot of return out of him as far as commitment. I said, I think you can do better. We talked. I said, tell you what, if you can pull, and I forget what the number was, maybe an 85% in his math. I said, if you can get 85% or higher for the next 2 weeks, I'll do something with you. He did. He stepped up to the plate and he pulled it, and so I took him to a cattle sale one Saturday. Spent the day with him. It was enjoyable. It was a stepping stone in our relationship. I think he enjoyed it. And there was some other things, some other incidents that took place that also helped motivate him, but there was a change. Sometimes we need to go the second mile. Sometimes we need to visit in homes. I think that's been talked about in different workshops. what we're talking about, visiting in homes, visiting with parents, there's other ways. We're trying to identify the ingredients. What are we working with?
Getting a little more of an understanding.
All right, our second point here. Again, we're thinking of making this kettle of soup, stew. We've identified the ingredients. What's the next thing in our melting pot? H word. What do you need if you're going to make a kettle of soup? Heat. We're thinking about melting point. Melting point is the temperature at which a substance changes from a solid to a liquid. And we all know enough about melting points that melting points of different substances vary quite considerably. Some materials maybe will only melt at 1,000 degrees. Some materials melt at much lower degrees. So thinking about our classroom, bringing this analogy back into our classroom, what are the different melting points that we're talking about? What are the different aspects that change from solid to liquid? At what point do your students turn from solid to liquid, from hard to soft, from lumpy to smooth? You get the picture? From unworkable to workable. What point is it? Is it the same point with all students? So what are some of those different melting points? You can think of student engagement in class. Some are off in La La Land. The next one is just with you. It doesn't matter. Every class, he or she is just right there. You ask a question, they're right on the ball, they're right with you. There's different levels. Class participation, comprehension, retention. Any others? Probably the first one that comes to your mind I didn't mention. B word. Behavior. Different melting points with behavior too, isn't there? Some are very, very quick to respond. Some are angels. Some are not angels. Different points. Some require more heat than others. So, thinking more about this heat, what are we talking about? I thought about the heat of hard work. Good results don't just happen. I think as teachers, we need to be examples in this. We need to be committed to hard work ourselves. We also need to encourage it. We need to require it. The Bible says, whatsoever thy hand findeth to do, whatever that is, whether it's playing softball, whether it's their homework, whether it's other projects, our children or students need to they're at school. We have a lot of whatsoevers that our children do. So we need hard work. Encourage that. The next one that I have here under heat is the heat of heart. And let me explain. The heat of heart. Just H-E-A-R-T. And here's my thought. The amount of heart that we invest into our students is a choice. The amount of heart we invest into our students is a choice. And I'm thinking of what it takes to melt these children, melt these students, to make them useful, to make them into a good product. Have you ever heard a teacher whose conversation kind of went like this? They regretted the fact that they had said yes. They were coming into a school year, maybe into the school year already, and they just wished
They wish they hadn't said that.
And maybe some of us have been at those places ourselves. I don't want to talk more about that, but we're talking about the heart. Maybe you've heard conversations where teachers, they talk a lot about life at home, back at home, and they wish they were back home, and you can tell their heart is not here, their heart isn't in school, their heart is back home. How effective will that be in melting? Maybe they refuse to embrace local practices or circumstances. Maybe they're obsessed with their own personal plans, whatever that may be, personal hobbies or personal other personal plans. The heart component is missing. And I think we need to remember something in those situations. Who takes the hit when the heart is missing? It's the children that take the hit. So let's remember that. If our heart isn't in the classroom, if our heart isn't in the students, we can leave. We won't receive the blessing, but it's the children that take the hit. It's the students that are being cheated. I had a class of 10th graders one time. Those 10th graders had 7 first grade teachers. In first grade, when they were in first grade, they had 7 different teachers. And in 10th grade, there were still scars and voids in their lives because of that. I was convinced of it. Different things would show up that they should have, their foundation was missing. It had been fractured. It was a very unfortunate situation. On the other hand, we love seeing students and teachers together loving life. I love seeing that. I love it. Seeing teachers and students, you can just tell they just love their together time. I had a co-teacher one time knock on my door during class and asked to chat with me. I stepped outside of my classroom and she cut right to the chase. She had a little issue. Her little guy was first grade boy, had lied. And this wasn't the first incident. And she gave me the scenario. And she said, "Am I thinking right? Am I thinking right?" I said, "Yes, you're thinking right. You need to do what you're going to do." She walked back to her classroom. I walked into my classroom. She went and she took care of the lying issue with that little fellow. That teacher saw some things that day. She saw a problem. She saw a young lad with a guilty conscience. But there was a few things that she didn't see. She did not see the desire in my heart to bail her out. Part of me that would have loved to just say, "You know what, I'll take care of it." Because I knew she was feeling heavy with the scenario because it had been kind of building up and it wasn't the first scenario. But I knew I couldn't. I knew it was important that she took care of that. Another thing she didn't see that day, she did not see the tear in my eye when I went back into my classroom. I don't remember many things about my first grade, But there's one thing that I remember. I remember the time, and I remembered this time that day when I walked back into my classroom. I remembered the time when my first grade teacher cleared my guilty conscience. And it touched me. It touched my heart. I'm not sure this young lady saw down the road of time when this first grade boy, as a grown adult, would look back and thank God for his first grade teacher. I don't know or not. I don't know if she saw or noticed which one of her students was closest to her later in the day around the art table. I'd like to tell each one of you today, if you have co-teachers who are willing to have, what's our word? Not heat, but heart. All together, if have heart in their classroom, if you have co-teachers who have heart in their classroom, thank God. Praise God for that. Teachers who are willing to face the heat, teachers who are willing to get a little warm themselves, teachers who are ready to apply necessary heat, whatever that heat is required for melting, for usefulness, they're willing to do the right thing, and above all else, they desire to walk in tandem with God. Tremendous blessing. God bless each one of you with that kind of heart. Usually we spell it L-O-V-E. Talking about the heat of heart. You want to spell it with four letters, L-O-V-E. All right, the third ingredient. We have three S ingredients here now. Quickly. What are we doing? We're cooking soup. We've identified the ingredients. We've applied the heat. The next thing is we need to stir. Good. What are we looking at for there? Sometimes I love helping Marilyn in the kitchen, and sometimes she'll say, can you come over and stir this? I'm busy. I don't have enough hands. Can you stir this kettle? So I'll be stirring, and then we either get to talking or listening, and I'll be listening also. My stirring kind of goes downhill, and I'll either forget to stir or I'm not stirring right. And she'll say, you need to keep stirring. Or you need to stir a little faster. You need to stir a little slower. We know how that goes. School has a lot of momentum. That's my thought here. Keep things moving. Keep things moving in your classroom. Keep things moving at school. Don't default into a lethargic classroom. When you get to be my age, it may be easier to do. But there's days when at lunchtime, I would love nothing better than for some of the men from church to come or my wife to come. I would just sit down for an hour and just have coffee and just relax and just catch our breath. But that's not an option. Keep things moving. So don't default into a lethargic classroom. Peaceful, yes, but not lethargic. I remember my mom sometimes telling me, slow down, you'll make a mess. The other thing about stirring too crazy is it's not sustainable. It's not sustainable. Your arm's going to get tired. Again, we're thinking of the analogy. There's a chance you'll make a mess, and you can make the analogy back to school. And my thought here would be, or my suggestion, recommendation, find a sustainable pace that keeps school alive. The key words there are sustainable and alive. Keep a sustainable pace, find a sustainable pace that keeps school alive. You'll need to find that. All right, what's another S word? We talked about stirring. Don't stir like a maniac. Don't stir too slow. Simmer. Know when to step in, when to step out. There's times that we need to back away. lunchtime discussions, maybe small interpersonal conflicts, high-pressure situations. We need to just back away and give it some time. Had a math class scenario one time. I had gone into the math class. I taught the class, and I didn't think it was that complicated. But there was a component that I had missed. But when we got into it, they started asking some questions, and we started running into a problem with this. And it got to a point where we just kind of locked up. I could tell they were frustrated, and there was something I was missing as a teacher. I finally asked, you know what? Just park. Put your books away. You've got 10 extra minutes before recess. Study English. You've got to get a head start on English. And I need some time to figure this out. I'm going to work on this tonight. Hopefully we have answers tomorrow. And the interesting thing was, we let that thing sleep overnight. We came back the next day, and all of a sudden the whole thing clicked and made sense. It was great. We're talking about knowing when to back away, when to just let things walk away from that kettle, just let it simmer. Behavior is another thing. I have made a lot of messes by jumping into behavior issues too quickly. Thinking I had the facts, thinking I had asked enough questions, and jumped in and made a judgment call, tried to solve something where I would have had a better result had I just backed away. And sometimes giving a little more time, especially to something that doesn't seem quite right. Is that a bell? Sometimes the situation will either accelerate or decelerate, and it will give some clarity to it. We need patience. All right, number five here, another S word. What else do you need? What do we need for our soup? Kettle of soup here today. Again? Serve before that. Again? Salt. Okay, she's on the right idea. Salt, spice, seasoning. That's the word, seasoning. I remember my grandmother standing in front of her stove. I can still see her. She's going on to her reward, but she would stand there, and before she would season, she would smell, taste, right? So the thought here is taste, season, taste. Taste, season, taste. I always remember to taste first. I like to sit down and get the salt shaker out and just start salting, and then he says, you didn't even taste it. So taste, season, taste. Another thought with this is, are we seasoning to our taste or God's taste? Kingdom work is about blending. It's about teamwork. It's about us. I think we need wisdom as we make adjustments, as we season our students in various ways. We want graduating from our schools, not replicas of us. We want graduating from our schools, replicas of Jesus Christ. So it's not our taste. Remember, God knows the plans He has for each student. Do our plans align with God's plans? Follow the recipe, number six. Again, thinking about my grandmother. She sometimes, I better not go there. Don't apologize for doing what works. Find a method that's producing the result, the intended result, and then follow that through. Don't apologize. I think sometimes we can have the tendency we want to try the newest recipe. We want to try a lot of different ways of teaching or of, again, working with our students to produce different results. Maybe we have to be careful with that. Following the recipe produces three C words. So following the recipe, the tried and proven, And again, we all love new recipes. I'm not saying that we don't go there, but we have so many resources. Our curriculum, our textbooks are full of material. Let's use the resources we have, the institutes like we're enjoying this week. Following the recipe produces three C words: consistency, calmness, and clarity. Last of all, number seven, take one more minute here, yeah. There's our final bell. Be the C. Did you have it? Cook. Be the cook. Be the teacher. And my thought on that is you be you. Be yourself. Be authentic. You're the one that's cooking the soup. You're the one that's responsible. You be the person that God intends you to be. There's a song, and I'm just going to, if you want to mark it down, I was going to, if we had time, I would talk about the verses, but it's the song, "Oh, to be like thee," and the last phrase in that song says, it's a prayer to God, that we desire to be like God, and the last part of that song says, "Stamp thine own image deep on my heart." That's my prayer for each one of you as you go into your classroom this year.